Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we bring you interviews with the top politicians, the lawmakers, the researchers, scientists, doctors, lawyers. But you know, sometimes we like to take a moment and talk to the people, because this is what it's really all about, ending adult marijuana prohibition, and especially when we're talking about the potential of cannabis and cannabinoid medicines to be able to treat very, very serious illnesses. And one of these illnesses that we talk about a lot here on the Stash is cancer. There's a lot of promising research in the treatment of cancers, and particularly a type of cancer called glioma. We did a story a few weeks ago about Senator Ted Kennedy needing treatment for that sort of cancer. Well, I'm very happy here to introduce to you a friend of the Stash, a person who's been listening for a while and emailed me a couple of times, and I thought his story was quite interesting and we ought to bring it up to everyone else's attention, and he agreed to be here. So this is Frank from Las Vegas, and Frank, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Yeah, now what I noticed here in your email, you had mentioned about going down to Nevada for the Nevada Cancer Research Institute, and why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about your story and how marijuana fits in with that story?
Well, the story goes long back to my teenage years, actually. It turns out that I've been diagnosed with a type 2 glioma in my brainstem, and it's been slowly growing approximately since I was 15 or 16 years old, and been pushing back and growing towards the spinal cord based off of my brainstem. And it's something that I've never known was there, but it was something that was just continually growing and causing different symptoms along the way. About 10 years ago, I was shocked while working on the job, and I thought that I had some hand injuries and nerve injuries that were caused to that, and so the doctor started treating me with Vicodin and Percocets and traditional just pain relief medication at that time to see if the nerves would heal themselves. But those drugs caused problems with my stomach, so I started, you know, I was at a party with some friends, I smoked some marijuana, and I noticed that it held my hands and my arms, helped all the pain, and so I started at that point treating myself, and I've been treating myself ever since for that, just so that I can continue to work. Mm. As it turns out, that the treatment may have caused this tumor to be slow growing and to grow even slower and not cause me as many problems as it did until now. So,
now how old are you now?
I'm 32, so it's been
half your
10
life.
Years.
So at least half your life, though, that you've been living with this tumor. Is that what they're telling you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And when you were younger, you said you felt different symptoms of it. What was that like?
The symptoms kind of came slow as the tumor grew. It was pushing against nerves, but it wasn't completely pinching them to the point where it was off. So I'd feel weakness in my hands, tremors in my hands and my arms, pain, constant pain, things like that.
Okay.
That was the bulk of the symptoms for the majority of the years.
Now,
slowly, there were more symptoms that appeared later on, but that was the bulk of the symptoms.
Okay. Now, the oncologists out there at the Nevada Cancer Research Institute, are they aware of your self-treatment with cannabis? Have they remarked about the tumor growth, how cannabis may have affected it?
They haven't specifically. I've told them that I've been smoking marijuana for 10 years for this and that, and they've, agreed that I should probably continue to do that because that's what's making a major change at this point is not a good thing during treatment. They are treating me right now with Temodar, and I've actually been doing a little bit of research about the way that Temodar and marijuana react together to actually help degrade the growth of the tumor. And, so that's something I've been looking a lot into.
It is really amazing. We've seen the research that goes all the way back to the 70s, where the federal government realized that there were possible cancer treatment options available in cannabinoid medicines. Our own Paul Armentano does a lot of research on this, and you can check out that research, listeners, up at normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Paul has written a pretty extensive review of the research up there. Now, Frank, you know, the drug czar, if he were here, what he'd tell you is that there's plenty of drugs out there that can help treat whatever you've got, and in the worst case scenario, you should be taking Marinol. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm not a pill person myself, and I never have been. And if I can take something that's natural, that grows on a tree, or you know, vitamins, things like that, then I'm willing to do that, and that's what I might would prefer to do. You know, I found that also, you know, during the treatment with my Temodar, the smoking of marijuana has been helping me with the nausea that goes along with the chemotherapy.
Sure.
So it's been a really, you know, it's been a really big help, you know, just treating with the aches and pains. It's been a really big help counteracting the steroids that doctors give typically when they do chemotherapy or radiation treatment. And it's been nothing but a big help for me.
Now, as a person who is treating with cannabis, of course, the federal government believes that it has no medical efficacy, and you could face serious fines and prison time just for these treatments that you're doing. Have you had any problems with law enforcement or your jobs or the community or anything like that because of your self-treatment with cannabis?
It's been a huge problem for me for the last 10 years. I worked for corporations that do urine analysis tests that I've had to get jobs. I've had jobs been denied to me because I was caught with a pipe at one point. You know, there's been several problems. I mean, having to pay street prices for medication, mm-hmm. you know, buying medication on what is essentially the black market for, you know, it could cost me up to $400 a month for medications. So down here in Nevada, I'm actually eligible and in the application process. I'm getting my medical marijuana card. Their laws down here are not nearly as good as Oregon's. Their caregiver laws are very vague. They don't allow for caregivers to be able to openly, you know, just set up a co-op or things like that. They do allow for them to change, you know, strains and swap plants and be able to customize the treatment based around the patient or the medication based around the patient, which is nice. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. You know, you brought up something that's really important there about the patients having to purchase the medicine on the black market at these highly inflated prices that are due to the prohibition of marijuana for everyone. You know, I like to point out that even if your state does have medical marijuana like we have in here in Oregon, or you have in Nevada, or especially in California, even where they have the dispensaries, the price ends up getting set by the black market. And so everybody, even when they're going to dispensaries, is having to spend a lot of money for this medicine. And that's what kind of why we fight for the end of prohibition for all adults here. Now, are you staying in the Las Vegas area for a while for your treatments?
Yes, I'm going to be here for at least, you know, the next 3 months or so undergoing treatment. I've decided to try to do chemotherapy treatment based along with what I've been doing on my own, first to avoid direct radiation treatment because of the location and the size of my tumor. The tumor is very large. It's about the size of a golf ball. And there's so many nerves and then the brain material back there that it's inoperable. They can't physically cut it out. So yeah. The only way that they're going to be able to get in there is with chemotherapy and a new form of radiation treatment called IGRT.
Okay. So your doctors then say that this has been something that's been growing at the base of your brain there for, you know, since you were 16. Did they give you any idea what the usual prognosis is for a 16-year-old with that kind of cancer? Are you beating the odds here through cannabis, do you think?
Well, my case was sent over to the brain panel at the University of California in San Francisco to look at surgery as an option. And that was the reason that they did that was because it was so large. They said the only thing that would make this this case a record breaker or any bigger would be if I was 28 instead of 32.
Wow!
So, but they do typically show up in younger people, and they are, you know, it is sometimes easier to get them out. It's just that because of where this one is growing from my brainstem and pushing into, you know, the top of my spinal cord, they just physically can't get in there to get it out. So that's, you know, typically if they would have found this, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it might have been small enough that they could have got in there. But now at this point, it's just too massive and there's too many nerves around it.
Now, how did this go undiagnosed in your younger years? Were doctors not looking for it? Did you have a lot of medical treatments back then? What happened in the early years that they couldn't detect this sooner?
Oh, a lot of it was probably lack of insurance.
Yeah, that's
what I was... Growing up and then being a working man and, you know, essentially a contractor along in the later years. But typically, I think, you know, I don't know when they would start doing brain scans or just CAT scans on people, just as a general test. But the symptoms kind of started very, very small, you know, a little bit of lack of hearing in my left ear. You know, something that can be usually just attributed to genetics or, you know, just hearing loss from, you know, normal wear and tear. And that was when they really think that's when it was the first onset of the victim or of the symptoms was then. So, you know, as it progressed, you know, the symptoms kind of came slowly. So first my vision, you know, got a little bit blinky and my eyes would get a little bit, gummed up and I could just kind of blink it away and it would be gone. So it was easy to ignore. And being, you know, at that point I was already smoking. So my eyes, you know, I didn't use eye drops, so they get a little bit dry anyway.
Yeah.
But slowly it would push harder and harder on those nerves. And eventually it's been causing, you know, a lack of vision, you know, facial paralysis, things like that. So it got to a point that when I flew, the tissue around the tumor got so inflamed from the pressure that it pretty much felt like the left side of my face was just knocked out. And that's when I went in and was diagnosed, and they found it and started on the steroid treatment, which has alleviated the symptoms by about 2 years just by reducing the swelling around the tumor. So it's bought me some time to work with the doctors on a non, you know, on my form of treatment, you know, the way that I would want to treat this rather than, you know, it's given me the opportunity to make some decisions about it. So,
wow, it's an amazing story you've got, and you know, I'll take one of these stories over, you know, a dozen of the drug czar saying that medical marijuana is a fake. This is you're definitely living proof of that. And before we go, if there's just one thing you could say to our, you know, legislators or the politicians out there that are so anti medical marijuana, what would you tell them?
Well, I tell them that over the last 10 years, yeah, I'm scared.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, it's okay, man. Take your time.
Emotional for me.
You're really helping a lot of people, by the way, by doing this. You're helping a ton of people.
Okay.
You don't even know.
Okay. I think I just tell them that money is not worth it for people and that greed is not a reason to spoil somebody's way of life. If something can give them relief, if it can make their life better, then they just have it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely something that they should learn, and we hope more legislators can learn that and more people can take this story and take it to their legislators and say that this is real. You know, medical marijuana helps people like Frank. Frank, thank you for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash from Las Vegas, Nevada, and we wish you the best in your treatments, and please keep in touch with us so we can keep people updated on your story.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.